Apollo Kivit, the Premier of the Northern Cape, Honorable Zamani Sowell, the Chair of the PSC or the Acting Chair of the PSC, and the Acting DG and the team, and the support staff. We're starting with our meeting of today. Can Masi flight the agenda of today? No, thank you very much, honorable members. This is the agenda of today with only three items, and you are all welcome to the portfolio committee of the public service and administration, and feel free to participate to this meeting. And let me first also welcome the minister amongst ourselves, Minister Apollo Kivit, and also the Premier of the Northern Cape, Honorable Zamani, and also the chair, the acting chair of the PSC, and all of you. You are all welcome to this meeting of this portfolio committee, and that I think, honorable members, it will be the shortest meeting of the day. You are all welcome, honorable members, and we'll quickly move to the second item, which is apologies, Masi. I've just seen two apologies of Honorable Mutsipe and Honorable Komane. I'm not sure if there are other apologies from honorable members, Masi.
Good morning to you, Chair and honorable members, ministers, President, the Premier, and colleagues. No, Chair, those are the two apologies for the members. Chair. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much.
Chair, I think we do have the standing apology for Honorable James, George James.
Okay, which is we've got the standing apology of Honorable James.
Chair?
Can't see you.
Komane.
Oh, Komane. Yes, Honorable Komane. Oh, you are here.
I'm here, Chair. I'm not well, but I'm joining the meeting. I will tell everyone when I'm not copy.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Komane, and we are wishing you well. I can see there's a hand of Honorable of Bukiwe Sangu.
Good morning, Chair. I am raising the hand on behalf of Minister. She is still having a problem with the connectivity, but she will come in as soon as that is sorted out. Thank you.
And I thought that Bukiwe will start with the Minister for her opening remarks. Okay, that's fine. Honorable members, on the 1st of March, 2023, the Department of Public Service and Administration, together with the Public Service Commission, were invited to come and account on the implementation of the lifestyle audits and the financial disclosure framework in the public service. And the committee was dissatisfied about the implementation of this lifestyle audit in the public service, which included the outsourcing of the audits of to the law enforcement agents. And during the oversight, the committee, during the oversight in the Northern Cape, the province, and I'm happy that the Premier is here himself, presented its standing regarding the lifestyle audits. Hence, we have extended the invite to the province to clarify us on the matter. We further requested the Public Service Commission to provide an objective view on the financial disclosure framework and the lifestyle audit guidelines to determine if there are some similarities between the two frameworks. So, honorable members, will then request that the minister or the deputy minister, if he's here, to do their opening remarks and immediately the presentation of the department as per the agenda. And immediately after the department, I will quickly then give the Premier of the Northern Cape to do his remarks. Then there will be the presentation of the province. And then the last presentation will be the acting chair, that is Honorable Dr. Boshoff, that will then speak just before the presentation of the Public Service Commission. And therefore, now that the meeting has been opened, I will then request that the Minister, Honorable Nokolo Kivit, do her opening remarks. If she's in the platform, Bukiwe.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. A good morning to your good self, to the honorable members of the committee, to the team from the department, from the Public Service Commission, and our honorable Premier from the Northern Cape. And to our support team, a good morning to us all. Let me start by sharing the apology of our deputy minister who's abroad, again on a mission, leading a delegation attending to an international, in fact, an African region, anti-corruption forum. In the public sector. So we also have our DG who is leading as the chair of the African region structure of APAM, which is an African forum for managers in the public sector. And therefore, Chair, let me start with those two apologies, and let me appreciate the invitation to the committee. It is important that, especially for this committee, those areas that are important to clean governance and to ensuring a true effort in building a developmental capable state. These steps of ensuring that our frameworks, our procedures, our policies are clear, as well as do give meaning to an accountable public service that is transparent in its operations, but most importantly, that is ethical in behavior. Chair, I'm not going to go deep into the presentations. There are people here who will be dealing with the presentations, but mine is to say that this is indeed an important discussion, especially as we close the Workers' Month. Today, going into the Youth Month. With the high unemployment rate of youth and going into a month that we will be focusing our programs on youth, we also, as the department and the public sector, are looking at ensuring that in all we do, as we attract young people into the world of work, we also create an environment for them to get into a clean environment insofar as corruption is concerned. We would want to ensure that our systems and processes of ensuring good governance do have an impact on both the workers and the young people in general, because we would want to see a nation free of corruption. Let me therefore, Chair, also indicate that, you know, the collaboration between the entities of government, especially the anti-corruption structures that have been created, it does yield results. Yesterday we were receiving a report that the companies that unduly claimed from the TERS, that is that unemployment fund that was intended to help people during the COVID, those companies were made yesterday to sign acknowledgement of debts because they must return those funds to the fiscus, and close to 100 million will be returned. So for some of us, it does help us when our systems are talking to each other, and when our systems are ensuring that the public purse does what it is intended to do, and it is protected from those corrupt elements in the system. We are therefore here, Chair, with a team from the PSC. Dr. Boshoff is one of the commissioners in the PSC. He is leading the team from the PSC today. We also have he will be acting DG today, Nico Mabunda, who is standing in for our DG. I have those two who are ready and willing to take you through the presentation, which has been circulated. That being said, we once again appreciate this opportunity to be in front of the committee, because this helps us again to be on our toes in terms of the work that we do. They are all supported by a number of officials who will be presenting. Matume from the Office of the Public Service Commission, but Dr. Boshoff is on the platform from the PSC, and Nico will lead the presentation. Thank you, Nico Mabunda. Over to you, with your permission, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. And then I'm handing over then to the Acting DG, Dineko.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, Honorable Minister and members of the Portfolio Committee and senior colleagues that are in the meeting. I want to ask, with your permission, Minister, if we could ask the Program Manager for Lifestyle Audit and Financial Disclosures, Dr. Solomon Hoogendraad Vermaak, to make the presentation on our behalf. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister, Honourable Members. Am I audible? And do you see the screen?
Yes, we do. Only if you can make it on presentation form.
There it is. Thanks so much, Chair. To start with the presentation, I was asked to brief the Portfolio Committee on the distinction between the Financial Disclosure Framework and the Lifestyle Audits Framework and its intent and purposes in the public service. So the Financial Disclosure Framework was the first framework that was introduced by government to introduce a level of transparency, especially around the disclosure of the finances of public servants. It was introduced in 2016 by the Minister for the Public Service and Administration, and it was issued by means of... Service Regulations. Now, Chapter 2 of the Public Service Regulations, and especially Part 3 from Regulation 16 to 21, deals with financial disclosures and provides the financial disclosure framework for the public service. And this is partly in response to the requirement that we as a country have when we ratified the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, but it's also part of the anti-corruption strategy of government. So the purpose of this financial disclosure framework is to manage the conflicts of interests in the public service, specifically where it's a database where employees then disclose their finances, and this database makes it easy for government to see whether there's to track and monitor whether there's adherence to the Public Service Regulation Chapter 2, especially around the issue of gifts, other remunerative work, and later also the conducting of business with the state. Now, what the framework entails is, first of all, that the designated employees, such as the SMS members, the heads of department, and other employees or categories of employees that's determined by the Minister for the Public Service and Administration disclose their financial interests via an electronic system. Now, the SMS members, including HODs, disclose in April each year, and the other categories of employees, that is now from level 9 to level 12, and it includes the OSD, but also is supply chain management and finance employees. They disclose in June and July, but every second year, so as to also alleviate the pressure on the system and also the work for the ethics officers, but also because of the risk assessment that's done, that it's better to have the senior managers disclose each and every year for good governance purposes. Now, the public service employees are required to disclose, in terms of Regulation 19, all shares, loan accounts, income-generating assets, trusts, directorships and partnerships, other remunerative work, consultancies and retainerships, gifts and hospitality, ownership and immovable property and vehicles. And that is now the information that's on the database that is scrutinized by the ethics officers to see whether there is a conflict of interest. And the financial disclosures are then verified, as I've indicated, and they use also the database that is linked to the Deeds Office, the CIPC, which is the Companies and Intellectual Properties Commission, INATUS for the cars, and also then the internal registers of a department, especially here I'm looking at the gift registers and those registers where people applied for permission for other remunerative work and if they received so. So in the e-disclosure system, then they will also attach proof that they do have permission to perform that other remunerative work. And in that way, the system helps to also verify and make sure that what the employees are disclosing is the truth. So the intention at this stage was to promote and maintain a high level of professional ethics as is required by the Constitution, and also to encourage transparency to manage any conflict of interest situation that is identified through the disclosure of this financial interest, and then also in the process to institutionalize the code of conduct, because now the public servant are then actually assessed to see whether that employee is adhering to the code of conduct, especially around the issue of other remunerative work and gifts, and in the process to institutionalize that practice and to also improve good governance. Now, up to here, the financial disclosure framework was actually just the database that was focusing on looking at the conflicts of interests that one can identify through the disclosure process. But in 2018, the president announced that lifestyle audits must be compulsory for all government employees. Strategy, and on 1 April 2021, the Minister for the Public Service and Administration approved a guide to implement lifestyle audits in the public service, and requesting that it be implemented by all public servants and all public departments, and as such, making lifestyle audits compulsory. Now, when this was done, it also addressed the requirement of the United Nations Convention Against Corruption regarding the conflicts of interest, but it went further. It's not only to manage the conflicts of interest, but to strengthen risk management in departments where they now focus on corruption and ethics, and using lifestyle audits then as a legitimate tool to identify risks and to address then corruption and ethics. It's also then further to address the issue of unexplained wealth amongst public service employees. Because if you do have a database and you know what people disclose, we also in government know what a person is paid for a salary. And then based on that, a review can be done to see whether that person is living beyond his means. Where there's issues that a person probably had more properties or so, then that is investigated. It may be that the person comes from an affluent family, has won the lotto, whatever the case may be, but that would then be determined through the investigation process. And then it's also to then deter corrupt behavior when there's then evidence that the person is definitely living beyond his means and that the person cannot explain where that wealth comes from. So this is the purpose of this was to strengthen the ethical conduct in the public service. Now, this process entails then the following. It's introduced as part of the public service regulations in 2016, where it's then a legitimate mechanism, as I've indicated, to analyze ethics and corruption risks as part of the system of risk management of a department. It's decentralized, where only the departments can do lifestyle audits. For example, the Public Administration Ethics Integrity and Disciplinary Technical Assistance Unit does not have a mandate to investigate or to do lifestyle audits. We oversee and manage the process, set the norms and standards. So the information on the e-disclosure system is verified by the department. And in the department, it's verified by the ethics officers as per the regulation to do then the lifestyle review. And this is where they then use the database, which is the financial disclosure system. They utilize that system to verify what the individual disclosed as part of the disclosure process to see whether that is correct, if there's any omissions, and then to also determine whether, based on what was disclosed, if this person is living beyond his or her means. And then also to look at the issue of conflicts of interest that may point to corrupt activities, also the issue of gifts and so forth. And if that is, it's determined that there is definitely something untoward, then an investigation is opened. And then the department investigates that the case. If they do not have the capacity, they can outsource or request the law enforcement agencies to assist them, especially the SIU, who has previous experience with lifestyle audits. And if they then find that there is a case to be made for criminality, they open a case with the police for investigation, and then they will follow the criminal process and charge the person, and then if guilty, the person will be convicted. But if the source of the unexplained wealth cannot be determined, and this will be in a very few cases, not every single lifestyle audit case that is started, then they will utilize the assistance of an auditor to do the money trail and to see. Thank you. If it finds that there's maybe cases that must be opened, then the second step kicks in, and that is the lifestyle investigation process. If the investigation is concluded, then the lifestyle audit is concluded. If there's no evidence, then the lifestyle audit is concluded. Now, the intention of the lifestyle audit framework was to determine if employees live within their financial means, if they can explain other sources of income that they receive, and that they also do not feed their lifestyles with the proceeds of crime. And that, therefore, the intention is to build an ethical public service with professional employees who focuses on service delivery and not on self-enrichment. Now, if one then looks at the similarity between the lifestyle audits and the financial disclosure framework, it's a very fine line where the financial disclosure framework was adopted as the first tool to address conflicts of interest, where it was mostly around the creation of a database, where both are actually aiming at strengthening conduct and giving heed to the Section 195 of the Constitution, but the lifestyle audit process going one step further, where it uses the information that is contained on the database to perform a risk assessment to identify if an employee is living beyond his or her means. And that is where the two systems actually joins. Because the first leg of lifestyle audits is actually the process where you verify the information on the database to make sure that what was submitted is 100% correct and that there's no omissions where people forgot to list the properties that they do own. And as such, the financial disclosure system is the backbone for lifestyle audits, because that is the source of the information that one will use to identify whether there is unexplained wealth and conflicts of interest. And both of these, if the two gel like it gelled in this case, it's called the dual financial disclosure system, which is also in operation in the northern parts of Africa and also in our neighbors, Botswana. So both of that then are part of the government's anti-corruption system to address conflicts of interest and corruption risks. And the same way we have like vetting that also looks at the security competency of people. And there's also a direct interface with a lifestyle audit where if you find then that there's any information that's disclosed on the financial disclosures that may have an implication on a person's security competency, it can be then referred to the vetting officers to also look at that. And also the issue of integrity testing. All of them are needed in order to have a proper system to make sure that we have a proper transparency and a proper constitutionally sound system that when it's correctly applied, people who's doing wrong will be identified and will be taken to book. Now, just to conclude, there is work done currently by the DPSA to also improve both processes. One is the financial disclosure or declarations, and that is where we have identified the last 10 years, the SMS members, the disclosure rate is very high. And the last 4 years, it's 98% with only those who's incapacitated or in hospital, so that can definitely not complete the form that makes up for the last 2%. And then also... Challenges to improve. We're currently at 64% for the non-SMS members, but we have identified those processes, those departments with challenges, and we are providing them with workshops. And also during the submission period, we do hands-on assistance where we register their members on the e-disclosure system. It's unfortunately still a manual-driven system, but we also deregister those that left the system and are no longer part of the statistics, so that at the end of the period, the information is tallied and correct. Then also those officials who do not disclose their financial declarations, they are advised to discipline the officials, and if they don't do that, we forward non-compliance letters to the relevant departments, and where there's non-compliance even thereafter, there will be minister-to-minister letters to request that disciplinary steps be taken. Then also we have started with the engagement with the SIU to look at those departments who did not do lifestyle audits at all the last 2 years, which indicate a systemic weakness. And in that regard, that the SIU then focus on those departments to perform lifestyle audits. The indication is that they will not have the capacity to perform all the lifestyle audits, but certainly in terms of what they have identified as risk areas, they will intervene and assist. Now, the more and more departments started to perform lifestyle audits, and we've seen a keen improvement in the detection of conflicts of interest, where from last year, January, only 47 provincial departments started with lifestyle audits, and in March this year, it already moved up to 89, with only 14 provinces still that is outstanding on lifestyle audits. In the national departments, we had 36 January 2022, it was 27, and in March 2023, it's already 36, with only 8 outstanding departments. And those would typically be the departments that will be discussed with the SIU. So with that also, the number of, that is now only mostly on the first step of lifestyle audits, which is the reviews. But we've also seen that last year it was only the Western Cape who referred investigations. This year there's 7 more investigations or departments who referred cases for investigation. And these cases may be just allegations. It may be that there's conflicts of interest or so. It's not to say that there's any unexplained wealth, but that will be tested. Chair, that is the end, brings me to the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Solomon, with your presentation. I will then quickly hand over to the Honorable Premier of the Northern Cape to do his remarks, and then the presentation from the province. Honorable Premier.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair Gweba, and let me also pass my greetings to Minister Kivit and her team, and also on this cold and rainy morning in Kimberley, let me greet all the honorable members who are part and parcel of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. Let me start by also thanking you for these engagements, just from the presentation which was made by Dr. Solomon from the Public Service and Administration. I think we got some better view and better insight in terms of our understanding of the different processes and how e-disclosure fits into the work of conducting lifestyle audits. We had our previous engagement with the Portfolio Committee here in Kimberley, and when I got the notice of this meeting, I thought it would be an in-person meeting like the last engagements that we had. I missed this part on the agenda, which says it's a virtual meeting. So I came prepared for an in-person meeting, and because the last engagements which we had, it was quite enlightening and it was quite educating. And particularly when we are embarking on such a very sensitive and sometimes quite complex process around lifestyle audit. So thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for the invite, which we are very grateful of. I just want to say that the DG will actually carry the bulk of the presentation to the committee today, but there's just few things that I want to reflect and which is totally in line with what Dr. Solomon has just highlighted with regard to the relationship of e-disclosure and as well as lifestyle audit. The fact that as the province, we have engaged the SIU. We've got a service level agreement which have been signed with the SIU, and that service level agreement was also endorsed by the Provincial Executive Council. Work that has been done so far is that in terms of the service level agreement, we gave the SIU 235 names of senior managers who must be subjected to lifestyle audit, plus 213 in the supply chain management. Those are the names that we've provided to SIU to conduct lifestyle audit. So the lifestyle audit service level agreement also includes the building of capacity of all risk officials and anti-corruption and ethic officials in the province. What basically we want to achieve with the service level agreement is basically twofold, and I think I need to bring it to the attention of the honorable members that the service level agreement is only for 12 months. And in terms of that service level agreement, we want, number one, to have lifestyle audits conducted on the 448 people that have been identified in the Northern Cape Provincial Administration, but linked to that, which is a very critical element of the service level agreement, is to ensure that we build on the current capacity that we have so that we can be able to conduct the lifestyle audit as the provincial administration without outsourcing it. So what we expect from the SIU, they do have capacity, and currently in the Northern Cape, in each and every department, we do have a risk and ethics unit, but those risk and ethic units, they don't have adequate capacity. We want to use the experience and the capacity which is in the SIU to build on the current capacity that we have. Also, the agreement is between the SIU and the Office of the Premier, and on behalf of the entire Northern Cape Provincial Administration. Hence, it was also tabled in the Executive Council meeting, and it was adopted. I think I also need to highlight the fact that the starting point and one of the challenges that we had is the fact that our officials who are working in the ethics and risk units of the different departments in the province were not vetted. We managed to rope in the services of the State Security Agency to get all of them vetted, which put us in a much better position to use them, be part and parcel of conducting the lifestyle audits in the province. So that's the work that we've done, and with the constant contact that we had with the SIU, the report that they gave us is that they might be ready next month to start with the first bunch of individuals who will be subjected to a lifestyle audit. And I must mention, in terms of the service level agreement, we were expected as the provincial government to appoint a liaison person who will liaise, be a project head for this service level agreement in the terms of reference that we've concluded with the SIU. The person is appointed, and the SIU have appointed the project manager. So we done all the legwork that is expected on our side, with the support of the SIU, and I think as we are having this meeting now, the province is quite ready to kickstart the process of conducting lifestyle audit on the officials of the provincial administration. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will definitely hand over now to the DG just to give some more details on the work that we are doing and why is it that as the province we decided to rope SIU because of the limited capacity that we have in our risk and ethics units in the different departments. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Yes, you can proceed, DJ.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Minister, and the Honorable Members and colleagues present at this August meeting. I think Premier has dealt with the gist of the issues that the presentation covers. But for purposes of this presentation, Honorable Chair, I'll go through the presentation that we have presented to this committee. Firstly, it's the purpose thereof is that we have been requested by the Portfolio Committee for Public Service and Administration for a briefing on our use or our intended use of the law enforcement agencies to conduct, and I must also add, and provisioning of support services on lifestyle audits in the Northern Cape province. This is pursuant to the Portfolio Committee having had a session in the province during the month of March 2023, which was an in-person one in the office of the Premier in the Northern Cape. And at that stage, the office of the Premier was still busy in consultations with the SIU and state security agencies in respect of our intentions to have them to assist in the conducting of our lifestyle audits. The purpose here of there of is to report on the progress that had since been made since the last Portfolio Committee meeting. And as the Premier has indicated, there has been quite a lot of progress that has been made. Now, further on the background is that the requirement for reporting on lifestyle audits to DPSA started in January 2022, and that is the part of the department's risk and ethics management strategy. During this time, the department did not have a risk officer, and we were busy with recruitment, and that recruitment was finalized during March 2022. And the requirement from DPSA was that officers of the Premier must consolidate the reports of all departments and government components within the province. And then an assessment was made. We made an assessment of the capacity that we have as within our risk officers in the provincial administration to conduct these lifestyle audits and report to DPSA. And Chair, once we were done with those assessments, we found that we were lacking to do that. What is currently in place? What have we done currently? I'll just wait. Oh, there we are. Can you just move the presentation to, yeah, there it is. Currently, there are fragmented reporting on the following, as my colleague from DPSA, Dr. Solomon, has just reported. There are financial disclosures to the Public Service Commission. We've got the Z204 security vetting that is done by state security, and that is for vetting our qualifications and so forth. But what also we have, as Dr. Hank has also indicated, ethics and risk officers have been managing what we have and what we call our e-disclosures. Some of these processes have backlogs, especially in the provinces, mainly as a result of capacity constraints in the several institutions. The methodology then that we have decided on, the process of lifestyle audits should go beyond the process already in place, such as e-disclosure processes that we have. We need to have relevant capacity to verify the lifestyle of an employee and make an assessment of that, whether it corresponds with the salary of that employee. Our risk officers in the departments currently do not have such capacity, and part of our methodology is for them to be trained to conduct these lifestyle audits in future, and that's why we are having this relationship with SIU. Our law enforcement agencies such as the SIU and SSA are already in the space of investigations and have legislated powers to seize required documents for the assessment that we intend doing. Our intention is not to have a desktop exercise that entails only verification of that which is provided by the employees, but to go beyond, to search and seize if it is necessary. continuation of the methodology to have a qualitative and rather quantitative approach, and that's also to investigations will be done on, amongst others, the following: one, identification of our IDs, driver's licenses, etc., of the employees, the spouse and children, divorce decrees if they are applicable, all educational and academic qualifications of the members and memberships if they are related to any professional bodies, statements of all accounts at bank, closing, loans, and so on, deeds of trust if we do have those, if they are applicable, administration orders if they are applicable, the latest salaries or advice or pay slips, completed and signed consent form of criminal record checks if they are available, completed and signed consent forms for academic records as we've indicated, fingerprints, electronic or manually taken, proof of address, current dwelling where the person has been habitating for the past 3 months or so, progress to date, and I think that's where Premier has indicated what have we done this far. A service level agreement and terms of reference has been signed with this SIU. That was done on the 11th of the month of April 2023 for them to conduct lifestyle audits on the 235 senior managers and also 213 supply chain managers within the provincial administration. And what we have done also prior to that, all our risk and assets officers have already been vetted by state security. That was done during the months of November, December 2022. Also included, what we also want to do is to build capacity for...
Recording in progress.
From the SIU. We are also in consultation with the State Security Agency, who has indicated that they will be phasing out their assistance to the Department of Vetting or Verifying Qualifications, and that will be taken over by the Office of the Premier with their assistance. Honorable Chair, we have engaged with Provincial Treasury to set aside funding for between 10 to 30 million rand for the project, because this is going to be invoice-based, so that we ensure that there are no hiccups, that as soon as we are invoiced, we are capable of paying for the services that state security is going to be providing in conducting our lifestyle audits. Lastly, on monitoring, there is a steering committee that has been established under the leadership of myself, and this steering committee will use the terms of reference to track progress on the implementation of the project for the next 12 months. And that is the end of our presentation, Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, DG. And the next item is the PSC. I will hand over to Dr. Boshoff.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Also, good morning to the Honourable Minister of Public Service and Administration, the Honourable Premier of the Northern Cape, and then also the senior officials in attendance. Honourable Chair, allow me just to inform you that the Chairperson of the Commission, Professor Fikeni, is unfortunately unable to attend today's meeting. He has commitments with the Western Cape Legislature today, so he has requested me to stand in for him and to represent the Commission at today's meeting. Chairperson, today, allow me also just to indicate that I'm being supported by Mr. Matome Malatsi. He is a Deputy Director General at the Office of the Public Service Commission, and he will be responsible for presenting the specific research paper of the Public Service Commission and also making the presentation. Now, today, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the Commission will be presenting a critical analysis of the Financial Disclosure Framework and the Lifestyle Audit Guidelines. And as you are aware, as you know, Honourable Chair, the PSC is tasked with specific responsibilities with regards to the financial disclosures and this financial disclosure framework. That process is contained in Chapter 2 of the Public Service Regulations. It is the law, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and SMS members are compelled to comply with those provisions contained in Chapter 2 of the Public Service Regulation. And the Public Service Commission has a specific responsibility in dealing with those financial disclosures. Now, in today's presentation, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we will specifically explain the PSC's responsibilities with regard to the financial disclosure framework. We will also provide you with background information on lifestyle audit research that we already conducted in 2011, just as background information. And then we will also provide you with information on a legal opinion that we received from the Chief State Law Advisor with regards to a potential role for the PSC in conducting lifestyle audits. That will be explained and the challenges with regards to extending the PSC's role in also conducting lifestyle audits will also be explained to the committee. We will also be making specific recommendations with regards to lifestyle audits, specifically for the consideration of the portfolio committee. On that note, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, with your permission, I'm going to request Mr. Matomi Malatsi then to take you through the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Boshoff.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I displayed my picture just for you and the honorable members of your committee to see who's presenting, but I'll close it so that it doesn't affect the quality of the transmission. Allow me to acknowledge the presence of our Minister, Honourable Notolo Kivit. Also, the attendance in the meeting by the Premier of the Northern Cape, Honourable Dr. Zamani Sol, Dr. Henk Boshoff, our Commissioner, and fellow colleagues. Also, allow me not to repeat, Honourable Chairperson, what has been covered so as to save time for deliberations by members of the committee. I will indicate those areas that have been covered as I proceed. Move the slides. Past this one, it just reflect on which areas are we covering. With regard to the first two slides that are appearing on the presentation we have circulated, the point of emphasis there is that PSC assesses compliance with the requirements to disclose financial registrable interest by the SMS, members of the senior management service. So, what we verify there as PSC is accuracy of the disclosure. We also verify compliance with this requirement. And where there is no compliance, we report to the relevant EAs, the ministers. We draw their attention and to the relevant applicable prescript that they need to take a specific actions mentioned in the regulation. Also, the accuracy of the disclosures is of utmost importance, so that the disclosures do not just serve as a compliance issue. It serves to promote ethics in the public service. So whoever lies in these disclosures, as we disclose, they open themselves to dishonesty offenses, and they can be disciplined and they can be fired, because dishonesty is a dismissible offense. I thought it's important. I'm going to present this in a practical approach. What happens when we administer the financial disclosure framework, and how it differs with the lifestyle audit. We will move now to the next slide, where I will indicate that the financial disclosure framework serves as a preventive measure. It prevents existence of conflict of interest in our administration. In other words, when our colleagues are busy with supply chain management processes, recruitment processes, they are required to disclose their interest and recuse themselves where appropriate. The lifestyle audit operates in the realm of detection as well as investigation of unexplained wealth. I will highlight how that pans out in a practical scenario. Dr. Solomon, my colleague, has covered a number of areas, so I will not allow me not to repeat those in the interest of time. We have observed that where there is awareness of these processes, the financial disclosure framework, it's intended objective, as well as the lifestyle audit on the other hand, meaning unexplained wealth, including hidden wealth, will be discovered and people taken to task. So once there is awareness and appreciation of that fact, these instruments serve to serve as a deterrent of unethical behavior in the public service. Can you move on to the next slide? Go back, please. Now, what happens, go back to the financial disclosure framework, just one slide before this slide. The employee, once it is found that an employee is a director of the company, it doesn't end there. The further evaluation is whether that company is registered on the central database of government. And once that is the case, the only purpose for registering on the central database of government is to do business with government. Nothing else but that purpose. What it means then is that employee has is liable to explain themselves on what we call potential conflict of interest. In other words, they are intending to do business with the state, a phenomenon which is prohibited by law. So in our findings, we'll say, in this department, there is so many potential conflict of interest, and explain the companies, their directors or listed directors. Where are they listed, or the databases in which they have submitted, and that they must be approached to explain themselves if the explanations are not making sense or justifiable, then appropriate action be taken against those officials. Then if that it didn't end with the registering at the central database of government, but the company went on to do business. Then we talk of actual conflict of interest. And the identified officials must be subjected to discipline. We know that it's also a criminal offense in terms of the PAMA. And the appropriate criminal prosecution processes will be registered. What does lifestyle audit entail in the next slide? During the PPE corruption investigations by law enforcement agencies, it has been realized how officials would collude with companies. Then the kickbacks are not paid to them directly. They go into the account of the spouse. They go into the account of the granny who's at home just receiving their SASSA grant. But the lifestyle audit, its nature, its capabilities is to reveal such actions on the part of the officials, because we are assisted to the great extent by the Financial Intelligence Center, because it has got access to all financial intelligence systems in our country. So if there is no investigation within the Public Service Commission relating to a particular official, we will draw the attention of the minister and say, EA, please take note that this is there is suspicious revelations around this official. There must be a lifestyle audit conducted. Or if it is a case that PSC is investigating, and we find that it relates to a maladministration of funds, a maladministration of tender processes, we submit the request to FIC ourselves as the PSC to get a profile in the financial details of these people. What are the details? How many properties do they have? Which one did they buy? Being an old property, but there are huge enhancements like renovations occurring in those areas, because it is hard cash that maybe it is being used. It is not money that is going to go through this system. So there are also physical verifications that must happen, but supported by information available, both from the FDF, but as will also be supplied by the Financial Intelligence Center in our case. But in the case of law enforcement, as it was said, they would directly approach they will have what we call Section 205. Move on to the next slide. They will have a Section 205 to summon the disclosure of certain records. Which now the custodian of the records are compelled to provide those documents. Please move to the next slide. This slide where we highlight what the state law advisor has canvassed. We know we are a constitutional democracy. Right to privacy is one of the rights, but that right can be limited by the law of general application. What does that mean? It means where there is a particular law applicable, for instance, saying all officials are subjected to lifestyle audit, or there are certain disclosures to be made to the Receiver of Revenue, SARS Commissioner, that right to privacy becomes excluded. If you are facing investigation, criminal investigation, or PSC investigation, that right to privacy become excluded. We ask for the information that must be provided, and profiling will be done and just to make sure that there are no unexplained wealth that go unabated. We reflected on the sections the state law advisor has raised, just for honorable members to see the relevance of the these provisions and comparing that with the requirement